program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, and it's a Monday. Welcome to a brand new week, everyone. But what a week it is. Oh, boy, things got started on the right foot today. And I'll explain all of that. A lot going on. Congress is back from their recess. Yeah. And even what's his name? Raphael Ted Cruz is back from his little Mexican vacation, such as it was. You know, Friday, we didn't get into a whole lot of the Ted Cruz stuff, mostly because, well, we had other things we needed to talk about, because I was still on the Rush Limbaugh thing. But he's dead, and that would be the end of it. I wouldn't have another word to say about, you know, Rush Limbaugh being dead, except I live in Florida, and we have a governor who is just horrific. He is just the worst on every front. He really, I mean, you know, it's bad enough that he's a Trump wannabe, right? He mimics Donald Trump. He mimics his mannerisms, his stupidity, the way he talks down to people, whether they're constituents or not. I mean, you heard the thing. I played it on Friday where he set up a COVID, a pop-up vaccination site, right, in Manatee County, which is, who knows, in the middle of the state somewhere. But apparently it was not for everybody in Manatee County. This site was only for the residents of two specific zip codes within Manatee County. Yes, the two wealthiest zip codes within Manatee County. And, you know, the people who live there just happen to be, well, big supporters, donors of moron death sentence. I'm looking to see if I have that clip handy again, because I would play it for you. Oh, sure enough, there it is. So people complained. And actually, at this little pop-up vaccine site, somebody questioned him about it. Apparently more than one person had questioned him about it to begin with. But a reporter asked about it. And I mean, you've heard this already, but I'm just going to play it again. And listen specifically for that, the whiny quality of death sentence's voice, because he's just such a whiner.
But look, I mean, if Manatee County doesn't like us doing
this, you don't like
us doing
this,
we are totally fine with putting this in counties that want it. And we're totally happy to do that. So anyone that's saying that, let us know. If you want us to send it to Sarasota next time, or Charlotte, or Pasco, or wherever, let us know. We're happy to do it. But I think most people, if we have an opportunity to bring vaccines and do it efficiently, I think that they're going to want it. And so...
Ugh. So if you really don't want us to do it, well, nobody was saying they don't want us to do it, but just how about opening it up to everybody instead of just your rich donor friends? So that's moron death sentence. Well, it gets better. And I think I told you this. I think the news broke as we were leaving the air on Friday. He decided that he is going to lower the flags in the state of Florida to half staff to honor Rush Limbaugh, of all people. Let me read to you from, I don't know, newspaper. The honor conflicts with the state's official flag protocol, which restricts lowering the flag to honoring government officials or members of the armed forces from Florida. Lovely. Anyway, he said he said at this press conference on Friday that lowering the flag for Limbaugh is, quote, what we do when there's things of this magnitude. And then he said it was justified because, quote, he was a friend of mine and just a great person. Yeah. So, yeah, that's more on death sentence. By the way, the agriculture commissioner in Florida is a woman named Nikki Freed. She's the only Democrat in the state administration. She said that her agency will not comply with this order, that her department will not lower flags at its offices, adding that flag lowering, quote, is not a partisan political tool. It should always reflect unity, not division, and raising our standards, not lowering them. And then in a tweet, she noted that death sentence didn't issue any order or statement upon the death of John Lewis, whose birthday it was yesterday, by the way. So, all right. So now that that's out of the way, this moron death sentence still it can't won't open up the state for vaccines for anybody under the age of 65. Although I did get a notice that Jackson Memorial Hospital, Memorial Healthcare System in Jackson Healthcare in Florida is going to start making appointments maybe as soon as tomorrow for people 55 and up who have one of 13 health conditions that makes you eligible, I guess, and you need an order from a doctor. So lung cancer is on the list. So, you know, I'll be at this computer first thing tomorrow morning trying to get through to Jackson Health. I also need a doctor's note. So I called my oncologist today. I'm still waiting to hear back from them, but I'm still being treated by him for lung cancer. So let's hope I get my vaccine because I really want to hug my kid. This is ridiculous already. So anyway, here we are. So I didn't talk a whole lot about Ted Cruz. And boy, there's so much I could have said. And the moment I got off the air, we ended the show on Friday, and then I go and I post the podcast and everything. Well, I noticed that just moments before we finished on Friday, Founder Singh posted a brand spanking new song. And you know what? I watched Ted Cruz. First of all, there were photos of him from over the weekend where he was allegedly, you know, giving out water to the hurting people of Texas because, you know, that's the kind of guy he is. Ugh. Meanwhile, you know that cars were lined up everywhere for water because people are really hurting in Texas still. Most of them have their power back now, but pipes burst. They're still under water boiling orders, and they're being hit with these insane, obscene electric bills, like thousands and thousands of dollars, because it's on a fluctuating scale, and because demand was so high and power was so rare, people are getting bills for like $7,000, $9,000 for not having power. So I have a friend who lives just outside of Austin. The minute she gets her bill, she promised she'd share it with me so I can share it with you. But anyway, the moment I got off the air and I went to post it, I go over to YouTube and I see a brand spanking new entry from our friends, Founder Singh. So what better way to start off a Monday than with a sing-along? So everybody, sing along.
Fly me to Cancun. Let me screw that old Lone Star. Down there at the Ritz Hotel, they've got an open bar. I'll get sunburned. Then I'll tan, safe and warm, while they're freezing. Fill my whiskey glass while they shop in the empty stores. Let them boil their water while I frolic on the shore. At second thoughts, still I flew, but I got caught, they all knew. Blamed it on my kids, threw them underneath the bus. Everyone in Texas knows I'm someone they can't trust. In 24, I will lose. In 24, Cruz.
Boom. Yeah. No, in 24, no one will vote for Ted Cruz. That is Founder Singh, their latest masterpiece, Fly Me to Cancun. I just love it. No, we're not going to run out of fun parody songs just because Trump's not there anymore. They'll just have to change what they do a little bit. All right, so more comedy a little later. We do have a guest coming up today, and let me tell you who it is. Jennifer Taub is an attorney. She is an activist. She is a law professor. And her latest book is called Big Dirty Money. And it's about money in politics. And let me tell you something. She was live tweeting the impeachment last week. And I think I told you to follow her because her live tweeting was so good. And she was going to come on with us on Wednesday because it looked like there would be a break in the action and she'd be able to come on the show. But if you remember correctly, and I had to run this through in my mind again because how quickly I forget. Wednesday was day, I don't know, whatever day it was. And the defense, yes, Donald Trump's lawyers, such as they were, finished their presentation. And then they just launched right into the next thing instead of taking the break. So there was never the downtime for Jen to come on the show. So then we said, you know what? Let's not do. Well, obviously, we didn't do it today. Let's do it on Friday, because on Friday, this will all be over. Well, or I've got it backwards again. First, she was supposed to be on Friday and it went long. And then she was going to come on Wednesday of last week. That's what it was. See, all the days just smushed together in my head. So it was the week before that was the impeachment. Last week, they were on break, right? She was going to come on Friday. They kept going. The impeachment thing ended on Saturday. So I said, come on Wednesday. She was supposed to be our guest on this past Wednesday. Well, on Wednesday, Jen's dog died. And she didn't even ask to be let out. But I saw that I knew it was, she was an older dog. And, you know, I emailed her and I said, look, I'm so sorry about your dog. I said, let's do this another day. Please don't feel like you need to come on my show. I think you've heard me talk about my dog, Sandy, who was my first baby. She was my first baby. She was my everything. She was with me when I bought my first house in L.A. And she was with me while I went through the whole adoption process. And long story short, after I brought Allison home, I knew there was something up. There was something wrong with her. Well, it turned out that she had a tumor eating away the whole side of her face. And it was horrible. And she went blind. It was the worst thing I'd probably ever been through. And I had to put her down. And it turned out the day that I had to do it was a day I had scheduled to do an interview with Ryan Adams, of whom at the time I was a huge fan. He was the leader of Whiskey Town. It was for the world premiere broadcast of the final Whiskey Town record. And we couldn't change it. We couldn't reschedule it. We had studio time booked. So I did the interview. I'll tell you something. I go back and listen. My voice is about three registers lower because I had been crying for the previous however many hours. So long story short, there's no way I was going to hold her to come on the show Wednesday of last week. And I said, and then I was booked the rest of the week. So we booked it for today. Little did I know at the time, the two things were going to be happening today. One, the confirmation hearing for Merrick Garland to be the next attorney general started this morning. So that happened. And then the day began with a ruling from the Supreme Court. Well, it wasn't even a ruling. They basically just rejected Donald Trump's last-ditch effort to keep the New York prosecutors from getting 8 years of his tax returns and his other financial records as part of this investigation into possible tax, insurance, and bank fraud in Trump's business empire. So all that happened today. Jen's book is Big Dirty Money. It's all about following the money. It's all about white collar crime. Perfect. So we got a lot to talk with Jennifer Taub about today. But before we get there, let's talk a little bit about the opening day. Today was testimony from Merrick Garland and questions from the senators. Tomorrow's going to be witnesses. But Merrick Garland, for those who don't remember, and if you don't remember, I'm really surprised because, everybody knows about Merrick Garland, who listens to this show anyway. Merrick Garland finally is getting his long, very long overdue hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee. The thing is, though, when he was supposed to get his hearing back in the in 2016, after Samuel Alito, Scalia died. Alito's still alive, unfortunately. But after Scalia died, Barack Obama still had like 10 months left in his term. And Mitch McConnell, the turtle, said, no, we're going to let the voters decide. And he would not even allow a hearing for Merrick Garland. Forget a hearing. None of the senators would even meet with him. Well, none of the Republican senators would even meet with the sitting president's Supreme Court nominee. They just said, nope, we're not going to even do this. We're going to let the voters decide. This is an election year, after all. Scalia died in what, January or February? He had many, many months. This was bullshit. This was just plain and simple
bullshit.
And it's the kind of shit that makes me so angry at the Democrats, because seriously, they pushed through Amy Coney Barrett in less than a week. Just days before the election? Again, it shows the hypocrisy of the Republicans, as if you didn't know it was there to begin with. But what really gets me, I know, we all love Obama. Actually, next to Donald Trump, I love anybody. But Obama was frustrating because Obama thought that everybody was going to love him. Now, he's a likable guy. I'd love to hang out with him. And well, I wouldn't want to drink a beer because I don't drink beer, but smoke a joint or something. Right. Hang out. Shoot the shit. He's doing a new podcast with Bruce Springsteen. Seriously? I did music radio for most of my life. I never got to interview Bruce Springsteen. And now it's the Barack and Bruce show on Spotify. I kid you not. Look it up. They just published their first two episodes today. They are doing a podcast together, but I digress. What Barack Obama didn't do is anything. I mean, when Mitch McConnell said, nope, or you're not going to get any hearings on Merrick Garland, you don't get to appoint a Supreme Court nominee because you're in your last year of the term, and I was supposed to make you a one-term president anyway. I didn't do that, so no, I'm really going to not let you have another Supreme Court nominee. Yeah, so that's what he did. And Obama, I said, I guess there's nothing I can do about it. Actually, there was something he could do about it. He could say, hey, Mitch McConnell, you live in Kentucky. You represent the state of Kentucky. Maybe Kentucky needs money for, I don't know, infrastructure, homeland security, Medicaid expansion, whatever it is, whatever you want for Kentucky, you're not getting jack shit. You can do the right thing and give my nominee a hearing, or you're shit out of luck. You get nothing from the federal government as long as you don't allow my nominee to have a fair and open hearing. He did nothing. You know, I always wonder, how is it that the Republicans play hardball? It seems like they push when they have power, they push, and the Democrats back up. And when the Democrats have power, they're always saying, please, please give me. And they still wind up backing up and the Republicans push on. We're always playing defense. Have you noticed that? The Democrats are always playing defense and the Republicans are always on the offense. So there was no reason. There was hardball that the Obama administration could have played, and they didn't. And the fact that Obama did not get to appoint a Supreme Court justice to fill the seat of the late Antonin Scalia, frankly, is a travesty. We should not be in the position we're in now with a 6-3 Supreme Court. No way. It's because of what they did. And then they did it again by pushing Amy Coney Barrett through. Sorry, my voice does that when I say her name, because that's how she talks. She's very robotic and her voice is way up here and she sounds like an android. Amy Coney Barrett. And I know my face makes this weird contorted look as well. What can I tell you? So that's where we are. But the Supreme Court did the right thing today, right? Actually, there were two things. One is, I'm trying to remember what the second one was. I know I put it in What's News, but I wrote it into my copy. I think I just added it in. But the first thing they did was reject, Trump's cry to I don't want to give them my taxes. Yeah, it's just too bad, right? Oh, and then the other thing they did, and now I did write it on that one. They basically threw out another one of Trump's election challenge lawsuits, this one in Pennsylvania, because there's no there there. But what's really freaky is so many of his acolytes, his minions, his followers, his lemmings, believe. I mean, when you look at the these statistics and in some new poll, somebody like Republicans, 73% of Republicans really believe that the election was stolen from Trump. Well, what do you expect when the guy who is the quote president of the United States tells you over and over and over and over and over and over again that it's stolen? What are people going to believe? That's what they're going to believe. And then there's lots of blame for this to go around. So this weekend, it's yesterday, the Sunday shows air, and I watch less and less of those Sunday shows because the hosts don't push back. So Jonathan Carl was filling in for George Stephanopoulos on whatever their weekend show is on ABC. And he has Steve Scalise on. Steve Scalise wants to be Speaker of the House. He's next in line after Kevin McCarthy. Steve Scalise is a weaselly little prick, right? And so just listen to this exchange. And my problem with John Carl is he asks, and then he asks again, and then he just moves on. You can't let them get away with pushing the bullshit. So here's what happened yesterday.
But clear this up for me.
This is John Carl.
Biden won the election. He is the legitimate president of the United States. The election was not stolen, correct?
Correct.
Look, Joe Biden's the president. There were a few states that did not follow their state laws. That's really the dispute that you've seen continue on. And look, if you're Joe Biden, you probably want to keep talking about impeachment and anything other than the fact that he's killed millions of American energy jobs, that he continues to. They just signed the Paris Accord that's going to kill manufacturing jobs in America.
Oh, my God.
But at the end of the day, when you look at where we are in this country, either we're going to address the problems that happen
right.
with
He's filibustering. Cut him off. Shut him up and make him answer the question.
State legislature set the rules for elections.
No, come
on. That didn't happen in a few states. And so going forward, look, Joe Biden's the president.
But no, but stop.
I mean, towards what people are angry about.
But Congressman, I know Joe Biden's the president. He lives at the White House. I asked you, is he the legitimate president of the United States? And do you concede that this election was not stolen?
Yes.
Very simple question, please.
Say it. Yes or no?
Once the electors are counted, yes, he's the legitimate president. But you're going to ignore the fact that there were states that follow their own state legislatively set laws. That's the issue at heart that millions of people
I'm cutting him off because Jonathan Carl didn't. That's the problem. They keep pushing this bullshit, and he should have cut him off, said no, yes or no. Was this a legitimate election? And if he says no or yes, but... cut him off. Sorry, we don't allow propaganda on our air, period. We're done. Goodbye. Sayonara. Game over. When you learn to tell the truth, then you can come back on the show. But they don't do that. They let them keep pushing this misinformation or disinformation or just call it what it is, a fucking lie. So here we are. All right. So I guess let me play you a little bit, because we're here, of Merrick Garland, who is the would have been on the Supreme Court. Wouldn't have been my choice if I was Barack Obama. I wouldn't have chosen Merrick Garland. Again, Obama chose a, quote, moderate, meaning a conservative Democrat, kind of, maybe, because he's showing he'll play both sides. And who did the Republicans put up when they get the chance to steal a seat? Amy Coney Barrett. Really? I was going to say two can play at this game, but obviously, no, two can't. The Republicans play dirty and the Democrats roll over. What a shame. So Merrick Garland, let's see. Here's a little bit of Merrick Garland's opening statement, just a little bit. I'm not going to play a whole lot of it, because you can go back and watch it. It's up there on the C-SPAN. In fact, they're going to rerun the whole thing tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern if you want to watch it. But anyway, here's Merrick Garland, a little bit of his opening statement, I think. Come on, here we go.
150 years after the department's founding, battling extremist attacks on our democratic institutions also remains central to the department's mission. From 1995 to 1997, I supervised the prosecution of the perpetrators of the bombing of the Oklahoma City Federal Building,
who
sought to spark a revolution that would topple the federal government. If confirmed, I will supervise the prosecution of white supremacists and others who stormed the Capitol on January 6th, a heinous attack that sought to disrupt a cornerstone of our democracy, the peaceful transfer of power to a newly elected government.
Ooh, what a concept.
That critical work is but a part of the broad scope of the department's responsibilities.
It is. So he said he will prosecute the perpetrators of the insurrection, whatever that means. At this point, I don't really know. But I want to play for you one exchange that really stood out to me. And I don't mean any disrespect. Look, I don't care what religion anybody practices, as long as they don't try to foist it on me. You know, I come from a Jewish heritage, although I don't practice any religion, as it were. But Merrick Garland, to me, I thought this is the ultimate goyim. I mean, it's just not Jewish name. You know, Jay Rosenberg, that's a Jewish name, but Merrick Garland? So I was really surprised to hear this answer. But listen to Merrick Garland and watch him, if you're watching on video, as he tears up with this question. And frankly, I like the fact that an attorney general sounds like this. Here's Merrick Garland and Cory Booker.
A question, and then my time is up.
Yeah.
You've talked to me a lot about your thoughts about this, and I've been really, really inspired. But it gets back to me to your conviction in this issue and your determination to go down at a time when our nation needs this, to go down as one of the great leaders when it comes to dealing with the daily unconscionable injustices faced by some Americans and not others at the hands of law enforcement. And I think that one thing you said to me privately particularly motivated me to believe you when you talk about your aspirations. And I'm wondering if you could just conclude by answering the question about your motivation and maybe some of your own family history in confronting hate and discrimination in American history.
Yes, Senator. So, I come from a family where my grandparents fled anti-Semitism and persecution.
Wow.
The country took us in. Protected us. And I feel an obligation to the country to pay back. And this is the highest, best use of my own set of skills to pay back. And so I want very much to be the kind of attorney general that you're
saying I could become. I'll do my best to try and be that kind of attorney general.
I believe your heart, and I'm grateful that you are living that MICA mandate.
Wow. I don't know about you, but that one, that surprised me. And it surprised me because, number one, being a member of the tribe, Merrick Garland is the most un-Jewish name ever. So I had no idea that, you know, that he was one of us. And to see the next attorney general show emotion like that, I found really refreshing because I think about what we had for the last 4 years. Seriously, think about it. Think about first Jeff Sessions, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. I don't know if he had emotions, but certainly whatever emotions he had were nothing that I was familiar with. And then after Jefferson Beauregard Sessions, there was Bill Barr. Yes, Donald Trump said over and over again he wanted his own Roy Cohn. Well, he found him in Bill Barr. So as I said earlier, we didn't plan it this way. I had no idea that today would be the day that the next attorney general gets his first questions, the first hearing on to be the attorney general. And also that today would be the day the Supreme Court says to Donald Trump, tough shit, buddy, you need to hand over your tax records. So I'm thrilled that Jennifer Taub is here today. Hey, Jennifer, I got to get our shot set up. So this is just temporary. I have a thing with the book cover and all your information on it, and I'll get it going. I just wanted to get started talking because I work without a producer. And anyway, so thank you and welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back. What a day.
Wow. So it starts again with the Supreme Court saying this is, you know, you got no case here. Donald Trump has to turn over his 8 years of tax returns and other bank records to Cy Vance, the New York City district attorney, and you're done. That's it. And not only that, there was no discussion, no notice, no notes with it, no dissensions even Amy Coney Barrett. And the other ones just I guess it was unanimous. Is that how that works?
Yeah, well, what's interesting about this is I picked a good day to, you know, have to go to work. I taught all day today, so I only picked up the pieces in between classes. But because what they actually ruled on, he wanted to get a stay, meaning an injunction, right? He wanted to get he is appealing the lower court's order saying he has to saying that his accounting firm has to hand over the tax returns and other records, right?
Right.
He was trying to appeal it on the merits. And in the meanwhile, because he hasn't filed the appeal, that he had asked for a stay pending the appeal. Now, in theory, he could still continue to fight the case, but if the cat wasn't already out of the bag when the New York Times got these, you know, while he's appealing this, those tax returns and financial records are going from Mazars to Cy Vance. So it's kind of moot at this point. So that's why it was such a skimpy decision, because it was simply refusing to grant the stay. That's what we saw. And that was unanimous.
That's awesome. So now I understand, and I, you know, when I see things with his name on it, I don't read it. But there are stories and the usual posts that he's having a tantrum today. He's throwing a fit in behind closed doors at Mar-a-Lago. Wow, wow, wow. Oh well, too bad. Next. So what happens now? Do you think that the records are already being sent over?
Most likely. Weather permitting.
Oh, right.
If I were Cy Vance, I would be, you know, standing outside the door with a, you know, a
wheelbarrow, right?
A truck, whatever, hand cart, you know, whatever you need to take it out, hand truck, I mean. But yeah, that happens. And the reality is they need these records because even if you have reporting from the New York Times or pieces of these things, that he needs the actual records, not just the tax return filings, but also the financial records, so they can fully make the case. He can fully make the case to the grand jury, so that they would ultimately, if warranted, issue an indictment. And so the big mystery is, when will the grand jury indict, and on what charges seems to be the question. I mean, in my dream of dreams, it would all happen on tax day, which I looked up this year. It's a Thursday.
That works.
So that would be my dream, you know, 4 years after the tax march and all of that. But, you know, I'm willing to be patient as long as the statute of limitations don't run, which has to be a real concern, I would imagine, with some of these state statutes that fans can enforce.
I would think so, too. Now, Jennifer Taub, your book is called Big Dirty Money. You follow the money in cases like this. And so, again, we got a bunch of stuff through the New York Times a few years ago, and it was thanks to Mary Trump, we later learned. When Rachel Maddow had that 1 year of the tax returns, people were speculating where it came from. We know after the fact that it all came from Mary Trump. And I believe she turned over a whole lot more. So they should already have a pretty good case put together, right? Based on the information they already had. Now they were just waiting on confirmation, perhaps?
Well, remember, it depends on the case for what.
Yeah.
From what we understand, and I'm sure you've seen this, Nicole, there's several different areas that are at issue. There may have been insurance fraud. There may have been tax evasion. There may have been business records fraud. There may have been bank fraud, on the state level alone. And there actually may have been something related to the Stormy Daniels money as well. Right. So, I don't know what pieces of the puzzle they have and what they don't have. I also know that in addition to Mary Trump, the niece, Fred's daughter, who was, Fred treated so terribly. I don't know if you read that incredible book she wrote.
I didn't. No, I guess I need to.
I listened to it on Audible, which is really nice to hear her voice. And I felt like, as much as you know about Donald Trump, I think this almost like a psychological history of him makes him more clear, and you can anticipate his next moves. But also we have Michael Cohen to thank.
That's right.
And that was 2 years ago. When he, how many millions watched? Was it 11 million people? I can't remember what the number was. An incredible number of people watched his testimony before Congress, which is what led to Cy Vance looking into these criminal cases, as well as Tish James on the civil front. So, I think a lot of what they're looking at in terms of some of the local tax fraud has to do with the way in which that giant, what's it called? I'm forgetting the name, Silver Springs, or there's a name of that. There's a place in Westchester County.
Okay.
That he had given an easement, a right to use to New York, and got some sort of tax, his taxes were reduced as a result of that. But the question is whether what he valued the land for those purposes was was inconsistent with how he'd valued it elsewhere, right? There's other things that you might remember Michael Cohen bringing up, different ways he would use his business records to obtain bank financing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, assets were booked high for purposes of getting loans, booked low for other purposes of other things like maybe taxes that he paid. So all of this sort of, I think all of his lies are going to come home to roost, and it will be really interesting to watch this case move forward.
Oh yes. Well, that I'm looking forward to. So, but this is Cyrus Vance. This is just one case out of what we understand are many. And also in New York, the Attorney General, Letitia James, also has something going on him, doesn't she?
Yeah. I mean, right now she's looking at some of the same topics. So far, she's only using her civil authority, this whole thing about how local prosecutors work, it's kind of fascinating. At least in New York, Cy Vance is a county district attorney.
Right.
He's for the Manhattan.
Manhattan, New York County, right.
Right, New York County, which includes Manhattan.
Right.
And she has the whole state, but the criminal authority she has she doesn't have the authority to enforce all of the criminal laws. She only has for some of the criminal laws. And then apparently you can go to the governor to get enhanced authority. There's some things, but right now her case is just a civil matter at this point.
So. I see. But there are other things possibly brewing in other municipalities or in other counties or in other states. I mean, it's not all in Cy Vance's. And in Georgia, for instance, we know that the...
But before we get to Georgia,
okay.
I mentioned the Westchester property for a reason.
Yeah, okay, right.
Because Mimi Rocha has now become the district attorney in Westchester. And that means, you know, if there's any reason anyone has concerns about, which I don't think we should, Cy Vance moving this case forward. I mean, in light of the fact that he just hired this former federal prosecutor who's now in private practice, who has experience, you know, prosecuting and defending mobsters, I think he's got the right guy there. But if there's any reason that something should, God forbid, happen to his will to move forward, we do also have Mimi Rocha over in Westchester. But you mentioned Georgia.
Yes.
It's true. In Georgia, there is a criminal case being investigated related to his trying to pressure and maybe shake down and interfere with the election there. It looks like that's moving forward, right?
Yes.
That's Fulton County's DA.
That's right. That's right. And there's audio tape. There's tape of the phone calls when Donald Trump was telling the Secretary of State of Georgia, find me votes. And not only just votes, but he had a specific number. The number he was down plus one because he wanted to win. So he's ordering this guy, find the votes I need to steal this election. And it's right there. I mean, you can't deny it. There's, oh, Lordy, there are tapes.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I think that moves forward, too. And, you know, then we also have, since you mentioned Merrick Garland at the outset, he apparently said today he's committed to investigating and, where necessary, bringing forward the prosecutions related to the insurrection on January 6th. And, you know, I'm very interested in the links between Alex Jones, Roger Stone, you know, is it, and I mean, it's like Trump and then... Jones spoke at the event. Maybe Jones was in connection with Roger Stone. Roger Stone, we know, had these Oath Keepers around him. I mean, he's always been the missing link in all these cases. So I think that will get investigated, and that should be pretty interesting as well.
Now, is that just totally under the purview of the Attorney General, or is there a District Attorney for Washington, D.C., who should be looking into this as well? Because my thought was... And my fantasy, which didn't play out the way it was supposed to, was, yes, the Senate's going to acquit him because look who's sitting in the Senate. But the next moment, you're going to see, D.C. Metro cops come in with a warrant to arrest him on criminal charges for aiding an insurrection, for inciting a riot. But that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that will happen. I think you know, it's complicated. It's a standard for incitement at a criminal level. It'd be harder than at an impeachment, I fear. But there's also, you know, who knows if he was, the question is whether he was involved in any kind of conspiracy with any of these folks who have already been, you know, indicted on conspiracies, as well as, I mean, we haven't even, I think it's really important to look at the obstruction of justice. I mean, what was, you know, Andrew Weissman and Robert Mueller doing, if not laying out a very detailed case and the facts and evidence to investigate and maybe indict on obstruction? So, you know, I would really hope that that doesn't get dropped.
No, I would hope not, too. I mean, it should seem that there are a number of parallel cases being built against this guy, because certainly there's enough evidence. So
remember, people wouldn't testify before Congress, right?
Right.
They can't refuse to testify before a federal grand jury. That's not going to fly.
Oh, really? So Congress, well, let me ask you this, Jennifer Taub, because my thought after both impeachment trials, and especially the way this one ended after this preponderance of evidence. I mean, we all saw it unfold live on television as it happened on January 6th. And these people, the senators who voted to acquit him, were the victims. And they still, I mean, it just, reality doesn't matter anymore. There is no real. But what I think happened, what I think is a direct result of the Trump administration, is that Congress no longer has... oversight capability of the executive branch. Our system of checks and balances is broken because there's no way to enforce it. You can say Congress is charged with oversight of the executive branch, but when they just say, sorry, we don't recognize your oversight of my department, then we have no oversight.
Yeah, I mean, they're just not, it's not that they don't have the oversight, it's that they have their tools, they're not using,
enforceable.
Right?
Well, so they're not enforceable.
That's about winning elections, that's about DC statehood. I mean, we have a minority with control over the House and Senate because of, as we know, having the Electoral College deals is with the presidency. We know how the lines are drawn with, you know, the lines are drawn in the states in terms of how it works to get, everyone gets two senators regardless of the population. Everyone gets at least one congressperson regardless of the population. So this ends up being, we have the majority not having control. And so when we have the power, then we need to rectify this because we're supposed to have a representative democracy. So DC needs to become a state.
Yes. Puerto Rico needs to become a state. And after seeing, oh God, I'm drawing a blank on her name, but the impeachment manager from the Virgin Islands.
She was incredible. Stacey,
she was great. Yes. Give them a state too. I mean, this whole nonsense, I'm sorry, you're a territory. You have a representative in Congress, but you know, she's not allowed to vote. And, you know, your vote doesn't really count, but we tax you. What?
As we're talking, I feel like saying, I don't want to be a colonizer anymore.
Right.
Why don't the white people stand up and say enough?
Can we?
We're not colonizers. Everybody gets to be a state if you're part of the United States. And as for Puerto Rico, they should have the right to self-determination. And if they think that is statehood, fine. I'm not so sure everybody in Puerto Rico wants to have statehood. But yes, I mean, D.C. for sure does.
Right.
Virgin Islands, right?
Yes. Guam, right? I believe Guam is one of our territories. Like, enough already. What? Who are we? What year is this? What is, you know, taxation without representation? That I thought we were against that. I mean, we need to start walking the talk because we don't. We frankly say a lot of things as a nation that we don't really follow through on. I thought today you were teaching, Jen, but I was listening to the testimony, and my goodness, it might have been Kennedy from Louisiana kept going on and on questioning him about institutional racism in government. And he, well, what does that mean? How do you identify that? Are you saying everybody in government is racist? I mean, it was just so tone deaf and so disgusting. And again, I remind you that I'm in Florida, where our governor, moron death sentence, ordered the flags to fly at half mast for Rush Limbaugh, but did nothing of the sort for John Lewis. This is the kind of opposite world that we live in.
And, you know, I mean, speaking of racism and sexism, the way Neera Tanden is being treated, and you may have, you know, you may have people on the left have different views about where her politics are. I happen to be a supporter of hers, but in terms of there's a complete double standard among, you know, who the Republicans will support of Biden's nominees. I saw Joy Reid tweeting out today, is it only people who aren't white men that the Republicans aren't supporting? And not only that, Joe Manchin, who was willing to support so many of the candidates that Trump put forward, so now is drawing a line at Neera Tanden.
Right. See, I'm not a fan of Neera Tanden's. Frankly, I find her abrasive and fingernails on a blackboard, and that's just her voice. But, you know, her personality, everything about her, and I'm sorry, the way she attacked Bernie Sanders.
We're friends.
And that's fine. You know, people are allowed to their opinions and we're allowed to disagree. Frankly, I would like to not see her running the Office of Management and Budget. But I heard one of these, Susan Collins today announced, I can't vote for her. Really? But you voted for Mick Mulvaney? She's too divisive for you, but Mick Mulvaney was just fine and dandy? That's the problem I have. I'm not defending her. I'm saying, how could you find him acceptable and her not?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about who gets to have a voice and who's given any space, I mean, to tell the truth about what was going on in the Republican Party over the years. So, yeah.
Right. And now this is what we have. Now, the Supreme Court did one other thing, and it threw out another lingering election fraud case in Pennsylvania. Again, I guess making Donald Trump furious. I don't give a fuck what Donald Trump is furious about anymore. Thank God we don't have to. He's out of there. Now, the question is the media going to stop covering him? And I think not, because the Republican Party still has him as their leader. And maybe that's because the media doesn't stop covering him. I don't know. Is it a vicious circle?
You know, I wish that I could care about how that party's tearing itself apart. But at this point, you know, no, you know, children in cages weren't enough. Wasn't enough. Good people on both sides wasn't enough. There were so many times where people had an opportunity to choose decency over craven partisan advantage, and they didn't. And they sowed the seeds, and this is their harvest. I want to say how much I really do like Merrick Garland. I actually met him when I was a visiting professor at Harvard Law School in the fall of 2019. I was one of the faculty members who went to, there's this thing at Harvard, a moot court. A lot of law schools have this. Sure. And typically the finals at Harvard, the moot court finals, where you have two different teams arguing an appellate decision. And usually it's, usually you have an actual Supreme Court justice.
Wow. Of course you do at Harvard, right?
And others maybe with them, like a panel. Well, actually, previously I remember just being when I was in law school, my friend, he used to be my friend back in the day, Artur Davis, you know, he went to Congress, you may know him. He won, he won best oralist for moot court, and it was Scalia. And this is some serious, you know, stuff. So yeah. What's funny is this, in the fall of 2019, because of everything that was going on at that time, things were quite busy, as you might remember, with the court. I can't even remember. I mean, it just, in the Trump era, every week it was something different. But there were a lot of cases, I think, going up to the court. And so there were no justices that were available. So it was Merrick Garland. Who was there. They had him in a panel with two other appellate judges. And he was so lovely, because what happened, the room we were in was extremely hot. I think it was in October, late October or early November. And the room was overheated. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a lot of air circulating. And this is something I noticed, but not a lot of people do. And one of the young women, I'm laughing now because it was unbelievable, she was in the middle of her argument, and she literally fainted.
Oh, God.
She fell backwards. So people got her some water. They took a quick recess. And then she stood up, and she wanted to continue the argument. And so she stood up, and I think the first thing she said to Garland was something like, could you repeat your question? And then everyone you know, clapped, and he moved forward very graciously. And I thought he was – I also met him before the event. I just thought that, you know, I think that what we saw today is the real deal. He's a very good person. So.
Well, hearing how he teared up and got all emotional talking about his family coming over here when they were escaping persecution from the anti-Semitic, it's like, oh boy, that's the emotion. That's a real human being. And that's what we need there. Somebody with empathy, somebody with feeling, because we've lived the last 4 years with no empathy. There was nothing human about that administration, and we need that. And I think that's why, look, I was not a big supporter of Joe Biden's. I was more of a Bernie person. But Joe Biden is showing humanity, and he's showing empathy and all the things that we've been missing. And again, all the criticisms I have of Barack Obama, I miss the consoler in chief. I miss somebody who has sympathy, who knows how to be a human.
He's sensing at that humane level, but he's not backing down.
Right.
In other words, he's like, we're using reconciliation. This is what I'm doing.
Yep.
And he's speaking right from what is his heart is, what's fair, what the country needs. And at the same time, like you're saying, he's this caretaker and consoler, and he's tough.
Yep.
I mean, I love that combination. And I'm so far so good on that front. Let's get this $1.9 or whatever it is, trillion dollars, yes, the number of this round. Let's get it passed. It's time.
Well, let me ask you one other thing. What I was talking about before you came on, my problem, you know, Merrick Garland, I give him a lot of credit for being there today and being, you know, as gracious and even keeled as he is. This man had a Supreme Court justice position stolen away from him by these same people who are now going to confirm him to be the next attorney general. And I really believe it's because President Obama did not know how to play hardball. He had 10 months and there was something he could have done. He could have said, Mitch McConnell, anything you want from Kentucky, you will not get. You get nothing from the federal government until you give this man a hearing, at least. And I felt like he just kind of let it go. You're going to steal the Supreme Court seat. Okay. And I've never quite gotten past that. Am I oversimplifying it?
Well, I mean, and I think the lessons from that era, I think Biden has said we've learned those lessons. I mean, that's why you had a lot of people in support of this budget, in support of reconciliation, who were from the Obama team, right? You saw their names because people are willing to say nobody's perfect. This was a place that this is something that didn't work. This happened also with Dodd-Frank, where they're all back down, pedal backwards, and still there were no votes from Republicans supporting it. So Biden knows what he's lived it. And honestly, I'm not sure that Obama would disagree with the places that he didn't make progress. And let's just not do that again.
Yeah. So do you think that, I mean, again, Biden is making all the overtures. We want it to be bipartisan. But if it's not going to be bipartisan, that's OK. We can do it without you. That's what Obama never did. He's like, nah, I'm going to bring everyone together. Everybody's going to love me. This is the post-racial era, don't you know? And Joe Biden is saying, I will give them the chance. But if they don't take that chance, that's all right. We'll move forward without them.
I mean, that's what it seems to me to be. And, you know, when it's not a serious counteroffer, you don't even talk. You know, in some way, if you're offering, let's say your house, you're offering it for, you know, $350,000 and someone offers you $100,000 right. for it, that's not a counteroffer. That's a joke.
And the same thing with when you come with a $1.9 trillion relief package and they say, well, we'll give you $600 billion. No. That's all. No. So that's where we are. And I guess we wait and see. But
also, let me just say, it's not just the number. My understanding is they were also rejecting the direct aid to the states.
Yes.
That's where it's needed the most. And talk about, you know, Nicole, what's so interesting to me is that the public is much more progressive in terms of things like minimum wage, in terms of healthcare support. You see it on the referenda. Right.
Yep.
But then they vote for people who somehow don't support the same things, maybe because of the abortion issue or the ways that the party system has polarized people. But when it comes down to what they actually want in terms of results, we're not so divided as a country.
No. And it shows. And I love the way they're framing it. You want bipartisan? Bipartisan doesn't necessarily mean I need senators from the other party to vote for it. I have majority of the American people who are in favor of this. Majority of the Republicans are in favor of this program. That makes it bipartisan. And it's so much as in the framing that the Democrats have always sucked at, the Republicans have been very good at. Maybe they're finally going to get on the messaging thing and realizing that sometimes it just comes down to semantics. The way
results,
you say
results,
something.
Results, yes.
There you go. Jennifer Taub, thank you so much. I know we were back and forth during the impeachment. You did an amazing job live tweeting the whole thing. I can only imagine how frustrated you were on Saturday when it all did what it did. And now hopefully he will get what's coming to him. Sort of like Rush Limbaugh. Eventually, in the end, karma wins.
I'll
leave it right there. I know at one point you when somebody, his producers, had put out a tweet saying he's not doing well, please pray, and I just wrote, I'm praying all right, and you tweeted me like, I'm an atheist, so my prayers, whatever, I guess they work. Anyway, Jen Taub, the book is Big Dirty Money. Go read it. It's great. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's great to hang out with you. All right. You take care. I'll see you guys tomorrow. We have Brian Karam coming in. We'll talk with him. Bye, everyone.